So, Andrea Lang.
Hi.
Brilliant editor, great mentor. Someone I had the privilege of meeting, didn't we meet at Afters when I was like a young punk?
Yep.
Not such
yep.
a young punk. Yep. But definitely a punk. And did I assist you? I don't remember. But anyway, you were there before I was.
Yep.
And have gone on to make good of yourself very impressively. Andrea, earliest credit 1999, Stone Forever, about the cult classic 70s biker film stunt. Do you remember that one?
I do. I don't think it's the first one.
All right. Good. Fair enough. This a lot of this comes from IMDb, so you all might want to jump on afterwards and go, Cunnamulla, End of the Rainbow, Scarlet Road, a lot of documentaries,
all documentaries.
AFI awards, ASC accreditations, ASE awards. You're a rock star.
Well, it's a hell of a band.
It's a hell of a band? Yeah. Tell us about the band.
What do I say about it? What do you want to ask me about?
What do I want to ask you about editing? Well, you say you've done a lot of docos.
Yeah.
Is that love of docos or something you think suits your temperament?
Yeah. Look, I started in news cutting in SBS, and so and came from a social work degree, which is pretty. And I think a lot of people come from something else to editing, and so I did that and came up through current affairs, and then it was a really natural thing to go into documentary. Cut at SBS doing documentaries there, and in fact, JAG luckily really had a very lucky early documentary with someone called Kerry Brewster, and cut something for SBS called Deems the Drive Time, which was about shock jocks and Alan Jones and the like, and that was a fantastic experience for a young editor because I got mentored by Suresh and Malcolm McDonald in that, and it was a dog of a edit. It was a story with no narrative that really was clear, and we cut on shot list, which was a magnificent precursor to things, but when you were working with something that had no structure, it was unbelievably logistically hard, and we'd go to screening after screening and everyone would just go, no. and then it got released, it got nominated for an AFI, and it got in the Sydney Film Festival and won a the Dendy. And we were really young, and I remember Franz that very night, and this is the first piece of advice I've got for young editors is, if you do win something, he came up to me later and said, Andrea, enjoy it, because they don't happen often.
Right, there you go.
And they're certainly very rarely related to what quality work you do. It's just a random event in this sort of, there is something about that. Your career doesn't go like this, it goes like that. So when you've got one of them, you just have to grab it and dance all night and run around the place with trophies and, you know.
How often does it happen that something that's a dog actually resolves itself into being something that's one of those high points? Is it?
I think the good rule of thumb for a good documentary is you've got to have a slightly mad director, mad, crazy, obsessed director, really smart, fighter, someone who's willing to really fight hard, and then it's the quality of the idea they've got. And it's a bit what they've managed to drag through the room as carrion into the edit suite.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't help yourself. You know, I think probably all editors then just you lock in and you just would walk through fire to try and get it there. You get this, you get in, you know, your teeth into it, and you can't let it go. And I think one of the things that's been the description of me, and it's not, you know, brilliant, you know, surreal, extraordinary cutting. It's tenacious.
Tenacious. You know,
I won't let it go. I won't let it go. I worry things like a dog, and I am all the way through a schedule, I'll just be going back over things, dragging things out again, trying them again somewhere else. And very rarely get into big stouches, but I'll just Chinese drip torture someone until they just give way on things.
So you get a director who's a fighter, but that's not your method. You don't fight with them.
No,
you go around.
Because you don't have any formal power in the end. You don't own the film. You're not the director. But you do have an incredibly informal power of the fact that you are probably in the whole lot, the person who's the closest to being the audience, and you're the most, you haven't got as much skin in the game, you're a hired gun, and so you get this sort of level of, and the more you do it as well, you're regarded professionally and you're a safe pair of hands and you're actually who they want to have there, rather than the director. By this stage, the director might be fighting with the producer, everyone's fighting with the commissioning and, you know, producers, they're fighting with each other. But, you know, somehow or other in the middle of it, you might be the person who's still the one who represents the audience and the film, you know.
Can you tell us about that moment where you kind of lock in, where you go from thinking, ugh, this is like, forget it, I can, you know, to, I'm going to get, you know, is it something you see in it or in the person?
Yeah, and I mean, I think in documentary, I haven't cut drama, really. I've only cut documentary. I've cut a couple of short films, but in documentary, it's nowadays especially, it's an absolute horror show when the stuff comes through the door, because there's so much of it, so much footage, and you'll be going along and you know I fall asleep, I do anything to avoid that first stage of an edit. I'll procrastinate, I'll get all my bills paid, I'll sit there and gotta look, and then something, it just starts to, you know, seep into your head, something's interesting to you, and it's usually something that fits into your own agenda about society or something like that, something you want to talk about, you know, that gets you, and egotistically you sort of think that maybe that's the story that needs to be told as well. So
something will show up and you'll say, oh, there's a thread, I can follow that into the story, there's something there.
Or you'll see something in somebody, you know, I'm always looking for a surprise character. Yeah. Character that's hideous and also something really likeable about them, or the other way around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, always look for some
that lynch. Contradiction that's in the character that can lead you in a few directions into the story.
And then I just boilerplate on top of that, and absolute. When I grew up, I read shitloads of Mills and Boone stories, crap novels. So in documentary, I watch drama for fun rather than documentary. I try and make it into a drama. I always try and fit a drama story, like, and then this happened, and then I, you know, do that with a documentary, you know. So you're really pushing it in that way. You're pushing reality all the time, but you're trying to hit those things about stories that will resonate with an audience, you know. Yeah.
So do you think that's what people know about, like, they think, oh, I'll get Andrea, she really tells stucco like drama, or I'll get Andrea, she really is tenacious, or I'll get Andrea, she shares my politics. I mean, is it...
she's Andrea, she's cheap. No,
she's
Look, I don't know. I don't know why they choose me.
You know? You don't know why they choose
you?
No. That's interesting.
No.
But they're still choosing you.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Not always twice, though.
That's interesting. Anybody you have worked with twice? Three times? How do those relationships evolve?
That's really nice, you know. I think what's good about working with people more than once is you walk back in and you don't have to do any of that getting to know your stuff. And you got a bit of a shorthand of language and stuff like that. But every film itself is so different that you can't rely on a relationship to be the same every single time around. I don't know.
Right, so the people change and the material changes.
Yeah,
and
where the director's at in their life, where you are, how strong the story is that they've dragged through this time, you know. It might not be what the other one was, or, you know.
Do you find that they usually get better, or don't
get
better?
No, not at all. It's a little bit like everything. It's, you know, you can have a slightly half-assed documentary drag through the door, definitely. But it's so hard to get funding. But nearly everything has got value. You know?
Yeah.
It's really hard to get funding. The most... the kind of weakest stories are the ones that are self-funded, actually, because they haven't been through the hoops. And
So you feel like that rigor that the funding agencies and broadcasters put people through, that does have value.
Yeah,
it's
at that
not
point,
just for nothing.
At the commissioning point.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think probably everyone in documentary would agree with me that then there's this tussle on for TV versus cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always keen to have people have a cinema experience in a documentary, and that is very difficult to achieve in Australia nowadays. The reality thing has really had an effect on the way commissioners think stories should be told. And so,
what do they think? They should be shorter and sharper, or?
Oh, look, it's It gets for, it's the very first 5 minutes of a film, you know. It's the sort of expectation that people are going to watch it by what walking past as they're making dinner, and so they can't possibly, that you can't expect anybody to be immersed in a story when this is their view, you know. So you've got to tell people what's going to happen, and you've got to get them very quickly, and it's got to be quite formulaic the way you set people up. You've got to know what the stakes are, you've got to know who the characters are, blah, 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 you know, almost tell the story. Everyone would agree with this in documentary. And you certainly can't leave people with any sense of ambivalence or sitting in a moment, you know, that makes people, commissioners, quite twitchy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you miss that?
You have to push back.
All right, okay.
You really have to push back. And what I find is that you're always doing, you're going through that all the way through the edit, and then when the edit starts to work, which often takes a long time for the story to really start to work, then you can start just slipping those things back in again, those moments, those scenes, those ambiguous moments. Nice. And it's when everyone's kind of, this is part of the drip therapy really thing, is everyone does run out of energy making a film.
Except you.
Well, you do, but, you know, in the end, you can't help yourself and...
Yeah.
Anyway.
So everyone runs out of energy, but if you've found something that satisfies that Mills and Boone, you know, it goes chunk, and it'll get all those points, that's when you can sort of...
Fuck around with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely. And that's where you really try and get what really is happening for human beings. And I guess documentary is always trying to tell stories about ones I do, human beings, and trying to get people to understand things that they might not have much truck with normally, you know. And
So you said that you will find something in, you know, in the big mess somewhere that speaks to you, probably because of your own social or personal or political kind of viewpoint. Do you ever find the material changes you, or in a way, like, becomes part of you?
I think, you become the greatest fan of the film, you know, as well. And you become a disciple, and that's why you need to screen, because you get utterly sucked in by... You're sitting there like a stalker, watching every single movement of every particular person. You're completely obsessed by them. And so there's a point where you actually can't see what it is that's communicating across. And so I would always say, you know, in documentary, screen early and often, but don't screen to commissioners early. Screen to people who are other editors and directors and a few punters. Get it out in front of them so that, you know, you often get a really big jump ahead once you've shown it to people. Even the act for you of sitting in a room while other people are watching this.
So it isn't necessarily what they say. It's just more like you're in the room and it's like
it's both.
Yeah,
it's both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Who do you choose to sit in that room?
Oh, you know, this sort of usual suspect. It's a couple of editors I'll always get in, you know.
Okay.
And then a couple of directors. People that are used to giving feedback as well.
Yeah. You're not scared to do that?
No, not at all.
Good on you.
Not at all. You know. But nowadays I'm sort of a bit leery about putting up, you know, the whole rough cut thing and the whole... Which still bewilders me, you know, what is a rough cut in a documentary? What is a fine cut? Sometimes they're an hour apart from each other, you know, it's sort of, and lock off the same, you know. I don't know how to, those things are all connected to budgets. You know, you get a spurt of money at rough cut stage, so the producers are really wanting you to get to rough cut. So, and that means a screening.
Mm.
And that might be at the 8-week mark or 6-week mark of an edit. And when you've got a huge amount of rushes, you're nowhere near something that's sort of plausible as a film.
Yeah.
Might have, you know.
So you might be showing something that's 2-3 hours long, or...
Well, it's just not. It's just you might have whacked it to the right size, but it's a mess.
It's
dog's
a mess.
Breakfast.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Okay. And that's hard.
You have to just wear that, and you're kind of sitting there, you know it's a mess, and...
And I think that's something in the industry that needs to be kind of thought out, the funding thing about how the budget thing works alongside the actual process of making a film. Because, of course, producer gets anxious, wants the rough cut, comes out early, everybody panics.
Yes, because it's a mess.
Yeah.
So how's that changed, Andrea, in sort of the last 10 years or in your
mainly,
time as an editor?
Mainly huge volume of rushes. The last one I've been cutting is 5.5 terabytes, about 600-700 hours of rushes. Fantastic film. But just getting to know
600 or 700 hours. Yeah. Well, how many assistants do you have? I mean, who's looking at all that stuff?
No assistant.
So is the director, somebody who shot it, is there? Kind of guiding you to places?
He shot it, and he's got a kind of, like, he's a random access memory himself, and be like, right, have we got a shot of him? Because he was there shooting it all, he'd say,
yeah, right.
And he'd come out with it.
Right.
But just the amount of time it takes just to wrap your head around that thing, and then, you know, even at the outset, you're looking at a blur of stuff, and you don't even know what the significance of it is, and it takes a long time of going back through it and going. And now we're at the point where we think we're still writing it in the last week, and putting in new scenes, putting in new things, but we know where everything is, and we kind of can go. It's like pulling up a sentence, going, "Well, we want to say this. Ah, that'll do it. That'll do it."
Right. So yeah. you become the second drive. He's got random access, and you're also you have it now as well because you've been through enough.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't stay in the head though.
Well, that's the question. I mean, you know, that's your memory, your brain. Yeah. It's retaining all that at some level. So you must clear the drives somehow.
It's amazing how little you remember.
Yeah,
actually.
That's interesting. Yeah,
it's me in a month and I won't remember.
Won't
any.
Remember any of it.
At the moment, I can go, it's on roll, so and so, so and so. You know.
So they say that about having babies, that there's this hormone thing that kicks in that makes you forget the pain. Is that what?
I'm hoping. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. So this 500, 600 hour thing, do directors like keep logbooks or anything?
No. Last two things. None of that.
Just a hopeful question,
Certainly not. No, the one before this one arrived on a drive without a director and no logging notes at all.
Right.
3 terabytes of rushes. No idea. Just have the drive.
Here's the drive.
Off you go.
It's
start.
A nice big drive. It's a nice color. You'll like it.
That's right. A lot of good stuff in there.
First thing you do is back it up.
And this one just was folders with names on them, really.
Right.
And transcripts, like it was all foreign language, all Cambodian, so thousands of people. Yeah. The good thing about subtitling is that the shit thing is that it's in a whole other layer of filmmaking on top of the one you're doing. You're constantly writing them and moving them and reworking them, which is, you know, massaging them, trying to, you know, because all languages have got their peculiarities. Like a Malinke language has got triple negatives, so they'll say, "I don't, never, wouldn't, ever do that." I don't know. It sort of does that. Cambodian is a building sentence thing, so you say, "I am a house, I'm a house that's been built." And so the language works like that. So when you're chopping it up, you have to work.
So you've got the rhythm of the sound of it, but then you've also got
trying to be, you know, so Cambodians won't jump up and down in the theatre and say that's absolute crap, you know. But it does allow you to have this layer of writing on top of it and language on top of it, which can be really fantastic, like when you're trying to build an emotion or something like that. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, you know, "I've left the building," you can say, "No, I've left going up." You can say, "I've flown away," or, you know, you can just push it a bit.
Nice.
And I mean, it's one of those things, I think, with editing is that, and I get into trouble, you know, because, you know, is it true, is it not true? But if you're true to what that person's going through and what sort of person they are and what sort of imagination they've got, you can push stuff in a dramatic way, and people don't balk. They go, yeah, that's what I meant. You know? That was it.
So you've developed this, like, reading of characters or this understanding of people and characters through cutting them.
You stalk. You do.
Stalk.
Yeah, you do.
So
you're looking for the moment when they do say that thing as well, and then build the whole thing around that.
And that's a way in. So you'll pursue a person maybe through that 500 or 600 hours and find where they
lift
show
it
up again and stuff like that. Interesting. So,
but also, you know, if you've got a strong character, they're going to give you all this sort of stuff, you know, an emotional depth and an intellectual depth that you can use.
Mm.
Just got to know where it is.
Yeah. Mm. So it arrives, no logbook, 500, 600 hours, some folders, script?
No. sometimes a treatment.
A treatment, yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
That, you know, that'll be... Or trailers. People like to cut trailers now, and they can be problematic because that's what the commissioning producers want.
Right.
Is the trailer again.
Right.
And
be bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Any bigger.
Just
and
as often, flashy.
Yeah,
and just
oh, it was so much better in the trailer. You've lost so much out of it. But look, and then it's just about the director. Having a director with you is a marvelous thing, and the rules of having them and not having them is I'm sure everyone here's got stuff to say about that.
Got their own. You know. Tell us about yours.
Oh look, I've always with directors taken the approach that you can come here as often as you want, but also it has to be said that there's points where you really don't want them around, and you once again you do try and. Suggest they go for a swim or suggest they'd like Wednesday mornings off or something. I never try and make a line. I always try and keep it really loose and people feel really relaxed in the edit suite so they feel like they can let go of things because that's what you're always asking people to do is let go of the things they thought were fabulous. And
yes.
And so as long as they feel like you're really on their side and they're still in control, then it's easy. But as soon as you start making boundaries and you're the one on this machine and you're not looking at them and they're sitting there and it doesn't take longer for people to get worried about that.
They get anxious, they start to feel like, oh, you have some secret thing, some
and
agenda.
And you're driving this and I can't control it and now you've done this and I'm not letting go of that and we're going to fight about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So your dance is between like exploring the characters there and kind of making space for the character that's here in your suite with you.
Yeah. I think probably editing is about 60-70% bedside manner with a director. It's about a relationship, and you've got to be in the relationship.
Yeah.
And if things are start going haywire, I think one of the things I always do is just push the chair back and look.
Right.
Just get away from the machine. You've got to look at the person.
Yes.
Because there's something you don't know when you're an editor. It's really off-putting the way this person's always doing stuff and they never, and they might not. People say, you're not listening.
Right.
Because you don't look like you're listening.
You don't look like you're listening. Yeah. And they don't know how you can listen to two things at once.
Yeah,
so you actually are tuning in both directions, but they don't.
And that's why it's so great to get rid of them. You can just be listening to
one
that
channel
thing.
Anyway. It's cool, Andrea. It's extremely cool to hear about your process and your dance. Mm. What do you think has changed in you over the years? How did you get to be so good?
Oh, no. Look, I think you just always learn. I mean, you learn every single... I mean, that sounds like fucking Pollyanna. But, you just... you get leveled out. You get absolutely... leveled by experiences in editing and sometimes it's like you're in a vortex and you can't get any traction and you go in there day after day and you throw yourself at it and you can't get through it and it really throws you back and sometimes you're totally convinced you've got something sorted out and it's really great and you play it and it's not at all and you've made a big song and dance about having that there and it's just terrible and it's a really, as Dennis always said, it's a dark art, and it is.
It's a dark art.
Some of the best things you come across are absolutely accidental, and some things you can think about really have a big structure in your mind about why that's all going to work, and then it doesn't. So, I think what you do learn is craft. Like, the jiggery pokery that might make a transition work better, or... we'll shove some music in here, that always works. But it doesn't, if the ideas don't connect... and the characters aren't believable and things aren't interesting in the way they're working as a story, then, transitions are never going to really work, So I get frustrated when people who don't know why the film's not working or go into that sort of thing about, just put a shot that there and you just think,
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to hear more about that. But what I might do is get Fiona up here to tell us more about it. I think keeping the dialogue going is really, really interesting. So thank you, Andrew.
No worries.
That's very thought-provoking stuff.